There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 409, February 18th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Marin Karting. Marin Karting offers CERG carts, engines and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. Check them out at www.marinkarting.com.
Thank you, Stephen, and we thank Marin Karting. On today's program, USF1's funeral has begun. Please send black roses. Stefan GP closer to getting on the grid, and Lotus shows up for testing in Jerez. And of course, the king of Karachi himself will be here in our globe spinning segment, Motorsports Mondial. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Just fine. I have sent flowers officially to headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina. It looks to be
Couldn't they have just converted an old NASCAR chassis?
You know, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not doing very much. But apparently it's in the news, of course, of Chad Hurley bailing, possibly going to Compos, which I don't believe. But people are just jumping ship at USF1 simply because people aren't getting paid. They've never really had the infrastructure or cash to start this thing. They started with a little bit, hoping just because it was USF1 that people like Coca-Cola, Budweiser, and everybody else would jump on board, and it didn't happen. No vision. This USF1 thing is a complete failure. Bernie Eccleston is right. And from what I've read and from what I've heard on the East Coast, that people are not getting paid, morale is in the tank, and people are quitting USF1. Of course, the other news is the building that they're in is for sale, but I think that has nothing to do with anything.
No, because I'm sure they're on a lease anyway. Again, I think this is an indictment of the FIA and their methodologies for choosing teams. It's like, if these guys didn't have the financial resources to at least get a car to the first race, why were they given a slot on the grid?
I don't even understand. It would be like F1 Weekly, you know, saying, "Oh, yeah, we'll be there next year."
Yeah, we've got all kinds of sponsors lined up. Yeah, sure we do. And look, we've got this nice little room here with computers in it, and look, we've got a big 5-axis mill over here in the corner.
Yeah, I think it's because of Peter Windsor's. He does have some pull. He's been around Formula One for a long time, and he seemed like a fairly intelligent and trustworthy dude.
One would think that he would have had, you know, some financial backing in, you know. Again, it comes down to, why would you get into this if you don't have enough money to get the car to the grid? If you can't, what's the purpose? Well, he's been running around blowing smoke for the last 6 months. To what end? You know, he's going to lose so much face. He's going to be the laughing stock of the you know. How can he work in Formula One again after this debacle?
And the worst part is, once again, any kind of a United States affiliation with F1 is a disaster. This is Michael Andretti all over again. It's just
this
a
is
disaster.
What happens when you let an Australian set up USF1.
Exactly.
Why didn't he go make Australia F1 or something?
Well, we'll see what happens. Stefan GP, I think, will be on the grid. I think that's coming closer and closer. I think Jose Maria Lopez could very well become the second driver at Campos. If they make it to the grid, there's a decision coming, I think, within hours.
Well, the other question becomes is, did Lopez already mail the check?
Are you kidding? If the check had cleared, people would be getting paid. But obviously, what I don't like is there's no transparency. Remember at the beginning, everybody would know what's going on. You could peer into the USF1 headquarters and see day by day what's happening. And that's so far from the truth.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I knew I was really worried after the little vignette that Matchett did at their factory. I'm like going, you know, he's been going to Red Bull all season, right? And so you see what an F1 operation looks like. And then you go in and they show Peter Windsor in his office. He's got nothing on the walls but maybe two pictures that are like...
with Jim Clark. Yeah. And a picture of Bob Newhart.
Yeah, it was just like, this doesn't look like anybody's been here, probably because nobody had been there. And then when they went out to the floor, they basically went into their design center. So we see the Red Bull Computer Center and rows and rows of cubicles with men working. And we go into the USF1 design center and you've got one guy and you can maybe see two or three other computers behind him. And I'm going, I know this is a low-budget operation, but there's no way they're going to get a car designed with that many people. And then they go off into the factory, and they show us, I think, one or two four-axis mills, five-axis, six-axis mills. And I'm like going, wow, they're going to have to really start cranking out parts. No, nothing about carbon fiber. It didn't look like they were ready.
To be honest with you, the more I think about this, it seems more and more like it was some kind of ruse from the beginning. That never really appeared to be real.
Or they were so completely unprepared without an absolute clue as to what it takes to put together a Formula One car in the modern day. You know, is Windsor still thinking that, you know, he can slap together a shop in the corner and bolt one together, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks like he did back when he was, you know, at Williams?
It is bizarre. But there you have it. Bernie was right. Nasser was
which
right.
Which probably really chaps my craw.
Well, you'll get over it because Bernie's always right, Steven.
It sure seems that way.
Yep, but that's because he knows what's going on.
Species get spies everywhere.
Exactly. But anyway, it was really nice to see the Lotus car on the track. I think it looks pretty good. The nose... everybody's got a high nose now, which is interesting. And I used to love the high noses of the 90, being a high nose guy myself. But no, it was good to see Lotus out there. They came in ahead of Virgin, which is important.
So the race at the back of the pack.
Well, you know, they've got that bet between Richard Branson and Fernandez. And, you know, I hope Fernandez comes out on top on that. But it should be a few laughs. But Lotus, keep up the good work. So we've got two new teams on the streets. And we got two new teams that really don't exist.
And a third team that's new that is, like, chomping at the bit.
Well, Campos, I don't know. They might make it if this Chad Hurley thing is true, but I don't believe in it.
I would seriously doubt it. If he hasn't put the money into USF1, he's not putting money into Campos.
Exactly. And at least we have Stefan GP. They're ready. They've already shipped cars.
Practically like a vulture sitting on the...
It's beautiful,
isn't it? Well, it helps to, you know, to buy out Toyota's operation and probably actually have two cars when you bought the operation.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was brilliant, and Toyota had a pretty good operation.
Yeah, the car was, you know, reasonably decent. It wasn't the fastest on the grid, but it wasn't the slowest either.
Not only that, but the engine was reliable.
Exactly.
So good for Stefan, and it'll be good to have some Serbians out there.
Good Serbians.
Exactly. Ferrari had another chassis out today.
Exactly. Two cars. There's a novel idea. Two cars on track.
Well, you know, hey, Steve, it takes time to get these cars together. You know, I mean, they only build, you know, maybe, well, a team like Ferrari might build 10 for the whole season, maximum.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but don't they build anything in parallel?
Not really.
Well, no, to some degree, but I'm sure that you don't go too far down the pike.
Because you're always improving.
Right, and you don't want to make sure you don't build in a mistake.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, this one came with new, but minor, aerodynamic and mechanical updates. The second car, and they've already got updates.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. They've tested twice now going into this particular session, so they've got some feedback data and can go, ooh, no, let's tweak that.
Exactly. So, Felipe, what I don't like is, well, I was hoping that Felipe Massa and Alonso would be on the track at the same time.
Ooh,
well, I know it's not going to happen.
Probably not going to happen.
And there are reasons for that, and they don't want to get the press too excited, especially in España.
And Fizzy needs the work.
Fizzy's not getting any work. So Felipe Massa will be testing for a couple of days, and then Fernando takes over Friday and Saturday, which is pretty cool.
Is Fizzy still the test driver at Ferrari?
He's a test driver, yeah. But test driver, they get the test later.
Oh.
When testing ban comes in.
When the testing ban kicks in.
Exactly. So
right now that means he's running and, getting Felipe's, Gatorade jug and tea and stuff, snacks.
They don't drink Gatorade in Italy. It's against the law.
Okay, his Chianti.
Okay, Steve. Keep up the good work with the cliches and the stereotypes.
Hey.
Sebastian Vettel was out testing today on top in Jerez, doing very good. Had a 1:22.593, finished well ahead of Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa. So Red Bull looking very, very strong.
Very strong. Fastest car out of the gate really last season without, being too funny that they started the season without the double diffuser and they were just as fast as the Braun. So not surprising. The Newey package, he's what now his fourth season with Red Bull. He's all dialed in. He's getting all of his updates, and he's building a car that finishes. The one thing he didn't seem to be able to do at McLaren.
Yeah, McLaren. No, it's solid cars, solid designs. People are copying the Newey designs, which has been going on for years. It's very impressive how Adrian Newey can still pound it out. I mean,
might even meet a Renault on the podium.
Well, it's impressive. I mean, even riders get riders blocked, but this guy just continues.
Yeah,
to innovate and
find the niches. One of the things too, I think that he can do, being the person he is, he's probably able to draw talented youngsters, talented engineers to him, which makes it even more because he can come up with a concept and he's got guys who can implement it.
Very true. Very true. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be a great season. 24 more days or 3 weeks to go.
3 weeks.
And, I hope Peter Windsor kept his day job at Speed TV. I think that's the big question. And I have a prediction, and we talked about this off the air, Tiger Woods is coming out with a press conference. And he's going to announce the end of USF1.
Oh, no.
That's what the press conference
actually, we can just hope that he's announced he's going to bankroll USF1 because he's one of those guys who could afford it. Maybe he's getting Nike to back him.
No, he's getting Nookie to back him. no, he's not going to do anything like that. But anyway, so we'll see. Enough Peter Windsor jokes. No more Peter Windsor jokes. Schumacher, pretty pumped up. The doctor has been sent home. No more doctor in the paddock. Apparently... He's been cleared.
Oh. So the geriatric surgeon's no longer around.
He's only 41, Stephen. Take it easy.
I know. I got to take it easy on him.
But no, he finished sixth today, or yesterday. And Mercedes Grand Prix, I think they have a little bit of catching up to do, but he's convinced that they'll be able to fight for the world championship. Because Schumacher is not going to be in this unless he can fight for the world championship.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have signed up with them if he didn't think they were going to be able to put forth the effort. With Mercedes backing, that's some that's extra engineering resources for Ross to draw on for some stuff. The the motor's probably been tweaked over the off season to get a little bit more horsepower out of it. But it should be interesting. We're still in testing. We don't know what's going on. Maybe they've already got updates that they just haven't put on the car yet. Will be very interesting to see how things shake out in Bahrain when we get that those first couple practices and see if what we've been seeing in the preseason has been sandbagging or if it's been for real.
Well, and we use that term sandbagging. You can just never tell what's real and what's not real in testing. I think I think everything is fairly legitimate and transparent, and I think what we see is what we get. I think Mercedes is a little bit behind. I think they're catching up with Ferrari and McLaren and Red Bull. And what's good about having a Schumacher, it puts so much pressure on the development team and engineers to improve. He's the kind of person that works with them and will get that done.
Max down!
Exactly! Achtung! So that's what's impressive.
Yeah, another stereotype.
We have stereotypes for a reason, Steve, because they're true. before we go to break, apparently the owner of Yas Island, which, of course, that's Abu Dhabi,
right,
Formula One race, has sold the whole kit caboodle to the government. Don't you love that? The government says, yes, we will buy it. That is so beautiful.
But didn't the government just recently almost default on a whole bunch of loans?
Well, we don't want to talk about that. But apparently the company was in debt for around 720 million pounds.
So it's still about $2 a pound?
Yeah, it's about $1 billion. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. It'd be nice to have a government that can, I don't want to do this anymore. You want to take it off my hands?
Well, that's the way it is, but there you have it. Okay, I'm not going to say anything about USF1 anymore. We know that they're in the tank. If you want to know more about USF1, go to our forum. There's like 4 or 5 threads just on USF1.
Yeah, hopefully Peter will get in there and dissuade us from believing this, but I doubt.
Well, I hope we get some kind of statement. I've been going to their website every day, and there's absolutely nothing.
When were they scheduled? Did they have a scheduled date for when they were going to go to Alabama?
There's no scheduled date. The last update on the USF1 website is January 25th
of the day that they kind of updated it.
Well, that was the day they signed Maria Lopez. After that, there has been nada.
Well, they probably can't afford a webmaster to update the website.
I can recommend a good webmaster.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, quickly, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with the globe-spinning activities from around the world after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the guru, the king, the queen, is in town. Nasser?
Greetings and NyQuil regards, as Moa is under the weather, but tomorrow will be better, hopefully. And I would like to welcome Mr. Leon Trotsky to the show today.
This is new style.
Mr. Fab Open Mind has a very new look here.
Just keep your ice picks, hidden.
Oh, exactly, and yeah. And don't move to Mexico.
Go feed the hatchets.
Yeah. So did we watch the Daytona 500, folks?
I caught a couple of laps. Very exciting.
How many?
2 was enough for me. And okay. I fell asleep.
Except for they ran those same 2 for like 6 times.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, today's edition will feature a healthy dose of Danica Mania in Daytona 500. And we shall travel from nationwide series to worldwide motorsports action. All wrapped up in a tasty and musical Mondial.
Damn.
Are you enjoying your in-flight burritos?
Absolutely. I'm getting settled down. I'm getting my little blankie.
Yeah, exactly. The never-ending NASCAR season has begun with their biggest race, promoted as the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. And young racing sensation Mark Martin from Batesville, Arkansas, started from pole. 6 hours after it started, which included 2 red flags and over 45 lead changes, Jamie McMurray from Show Me State showed Dale E. Jr. the way to the checkered flag. Typical and great Daytona finish as the Chip Ganassi driver from Joplin, Missouri, wins his first Daytona 500, and he was pretty emotional about it.
Match that dream. I told my wife today, I was like, she's like, if you win tonight, oh, I'm gonna cry. It's just very emotional. But after we won Talladega, we went to McDonald's. So I think tonight we'll have a Big Mac.
Dale Jr. came from 10th on the final lap to finish second, and had this race gone another 5 seconds, he probably would have won the race. Your favorite driver, Greg Biffle, was third. Monty was 10th. Scott Speed was 19th, and he was one of the many, many race leaders, so it was good to see him run up front and look pretty good.
Yeah, some was there for quite a while.
And but, I understand you took a nap during the race.
Yeah, it was too funny. I went to sleep about lap 80. Well, came back about 2 hours later. It was lap 40. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
It was lap 40?
Yeah.
Because they had a couple of red flag situations.
Like 2 red flags.
Yeah. Don't they have rest stops, like on the freeways, where you can stop and take a little break?
Look, this is good racing. You should watch it sometime.
Oh, sorry.
It's different than Formula One.
I know. I just wait until they turn right, and they don't.
A lot more wrecks,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And Max Pappas was 40th. Just on a historical note, Mario Andretti remains the only driver not born in the United States to win this race, and that was 2 years before he won the Indy 500, Daytona in 1967, and Brickyard Success in 1969.
Now, what kind of car was he driving in the Daytona 500 in 67?
Ford. It was a Ford product.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, those 60s and 70s cars, I love those big machines.
Oh, yeah. That was probably, what, a Ford Galaxy? Or?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. They had all those big cars, you know. Mercury cars. Cougars and, oh yeah, the Dodge Chargers. I love those cars.
Cale Yarborough.
Absolutely.
Back when they were real stock cars.
Yeah, real big American muscle, heavy metal, you know. Yeah. Those are very nice. Especially, you know, the car that won the 70, the Superbird, Pete Hamilton.
Oh, your favorite, the blue one.
I love that car. And people think I'm joking. Yeah, that's serious.
That's quality.
Oh yeah, absolutely. STP also had that sponsorship on that car with Mr. The King.
Yep, Parnelli Jones.
Yeah, a lot of people raced there. Hard to believe that even Jim Clark won a stock car race at Darlington many, many years ago. But that's what real race telling will do.
But that's not talked about too much anymore, is it?
Yeah, not,
Jim Clark and Darlington, you can't put that together. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but it's true. Okay, now we move to Nationwide Series. Season also started on Saturday. Rusty Wallace was not in the race, but had 4 family members in it, which is very impressive, including Miss Chrissy Wallace. And she crashed hard on the opening lap. What's so funny?
Nothing. Love people crashing out on the opening
lap. No, give the lady a break.
I'm cutting her some slack, okay?
Tony Stewart won for the 5th time in 6 races. Very impressive here. Danica lasted 68 laps before being involved in a crash. And, of course, prior to that, she raced in the ARCA, made a great save. And so there was a lot of hoopla and expectation. But
that was a great save because Mr. N, who we shall not name, tapped her in the back.
Which was kind of a surprise.
Exactly. So that was interesting. He wanted to be part of the action, that's all. But that's...
She got in his way on his way to the wall.
Yeah. What's really interesting is... now, was Milka Duno in this race?
No, not Milka Duno. She was in the ARCA race.
Oh, that's right.
But I still feel that Danica, if she moves to NASCAR, she will have more success here than in IndyCars because there is so many cautions and boogity-boogity, you know.
Well,
this
the viewership
and that.
Is so much bigger. I mean, IndyCars is not even on a regular TV. It's on a...
Versus...
cable.
Yeah. Some kind of cable. Yeah. You have to pay for it. But NASCAR is free for all people.
It's free for all? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, now we move to some other tidbits of motorsports information. Your man, your hombre, Guy Ligier of Ligier Metra fame and a rugby player in his younger days, has bought a stake in Manicours Racing Circuit.
We jump from NASCAR to Guy Ligier.
Absolutely.
My God.
Did you know that Ligier also built an Indy car in the 1980s?
Oh, yeah.
For a short time.
Well, so did Ferrari.
Yeah. No, but that car, even Kevin Cogan, yeah, Cogan drove on a Ligier Indy car. Yeah. Now, DC and DTM, David Coulthard tested a DTM Mercedes last week at Alcazaba in northern Spain. No word yet if he will race in the series this year. But I think him and fellow Scottish lass, Miss Susie Stoddart, they'll make a very nice couple.
Absolutely. And I heard he called Ralf Schumacher for a couple of tips.
I bet they were not racing tips. For that, you call the full Schumacher.
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay. Lotus, I understand you spoke a little bit about it, so here's some more. Back in F1 in British Racing Green, which is very, very nice.
It is very nice.
Yeah, car is designed by Mike Gascoigne, man of many talents and teams. At one time, he used to work under Dr. Harvey Postlewhite. Team principal is Tony Fernandez, owner of Air Asia, and at one time, he used to work for Richard Branson. So he is no virgin to airline business. A lot of airline people are getting in motor racing all of a sudden. Vijay Mallya, Branson, this guy. Who knows, Robert Crandall from American Airlines might show up also.
Maybe he can help USF one.
Yeah. You want to say something, Mr. Rogers?
I've already promised at the beginning of the show.
Oh, really? Okay, good. It was good to hear that both, this was very nice, both Hazel Chapman, widow of Colin, and Clive, his son, they were present when the new Lotus F1 car was unveiled, and so too were Stirling Moss, who gave Lotus cars their first victory in the 1960 Monaco Grand Prix, and R. Nige, who made his F1 debut soaked in petrol in the 1980 Austrian Grand Prix driving a Lotus. So there was drama with Nigel Mansell from the day he started.
Exactly.
He had a lot of burns from the fumes, pretty bad. Now, this is very interesting news, and I'm really excited.
This is good news.
Because I am a traditional motor racing person.
I understand.
Bibendo may be back in F1. Based in Clermont-Ferrand, Michelin is in talks with FIA to get back in F1. Company quit in 2006 after falling out with Mad Max in his Power Dome following the 2005 historic six-car U.S. Grand Prix, and all of us were there. Now they have a home slice at the helm, so there is no static at all in communication with Monsieur Todd. They're saying, can we come in? He says, oui, oui.
Entrez, monsieur.
Yeah, exactly. Clermont-Ferrand is also home to the Charade, beautiful Charade circuit known as the Nürburgring of France. And sir, my goal is, next time I go to Europe, I'm trying to get to the Spanish Grand Prix for all the stars and bars align. And if that happens, I'm very determined to at least make it to Clermont-Ferrand or Paul Ricard, time permitting, maybe both. Because I would love to see these two tracks.
You can do it, Nasser.
I will try, sir.
Don't worry, we'll get you some sponsorship, some stickers on the rental car.
Yes.
I'll call Peter Windsor right away.
Oh, I'm already there. So don't I have to go to Buenos Aires
first
to meet the president?
So you have to become Argentinian.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and as far as Clermont-Ferrand is concerned, this is interesting. It was on this track that the racing career of Dr. Helmut Marko came to an end after a stone hit him in the eye. Sometimes I've read it was a sports car race, sometimes I read it's a Formula One race, but you know what a small world is when the stone hit his eye. You know, I was badly hurt. He pulled over and, you know, Sherrard is all hills. And who is sitting there watching all this as a young man? Mr. Francois Castaigne, who later went on to become the head of Renault F1 program. Small world, huh?
It's always a small world.
Yes, sir. And Clermont-Ferrand was also home to former French F1 driver who I remember very dearly, Mr. Patrick Depailler. And as you may know, he lost his life in a testing crash at Hockenheim in 1980 in an Alfa Romeo. Now the question is, where have all the viewers gone? This was a big surprise. Did you read this news item?
I did see it. Yes.
Okay.
I was surprised, actually.
Yeah, me too. Formula One management has released its annual F1 Global Broadcast Report, a drop of 30% to $520 million in 2009 is more to late starting times for races in Asia and Australia than the global financial carambolage we are all in. The evening start time for Asian races is being blamed for this shortfall because, you know, at that time there was football and sumo wrestling shown, which is more popular in that part of the world. TV revenue for Bernie and company is about $290 million pounds a year. That's a very, that'll be close to like $500 million. That's some serious money. And they still want more money from Tony George to have a race in the biggest commercial market in the world. Pathetic. Biggest market last year was Brazil. Previous biggest market was China, which saw a decline of over 30 million fewer viewers. One market which saw a 6% increase in viewership was, surprise, surprise, UK, thanks in part to the two champions, the outgoing Hamilton and the incoming Jenson Button. Now we come to, oh, this is serious news.
Is this new news?
No, this is very serious.
Right off the presses.
Yeah. Adrian Campos is coming to America to race. Junior, that is. The 21-year-old son of former F1 driver and an almost current F1 team owner will race in Indy Lights this season with Team More Racing. Now, here's another chance for USF1 to grab another talented young American driver.
What do they do with these drivers, anyway?
I don't know. They're going to take them all to Argentina. And they're going to go to Patagonia, and I don't know, they're going to get lost in Patagonia.
That's beautiful. Maybe look at some penguins.
Yeah, exactly. They have quite a few there. And then he will take them to Tierra del Fuego, and he's going to say, folks, this is the end of the world.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, first rim shot, right?
I thought this Mundial was a tasty in-flight burrito.
Yes, but sometimes we do provide a side order of salsa, spicy salsa.
That's beautiful, Nasser.
Straight from Herdy's. Okay, be careful what you know. This is, I read this with serious attention. Be careful what you wish for, just might come true. Mark Webber has described his new ride, the Red Bull RB6, which I think is a very good looking car, as a limousine. Let's hope Dietrich Mateschitz, the head honcho of Red Bull, does not appoint Sebastian Vettel as the designated driver of this limo. Otherwise, Mark will be in for a long ride.
Well,
all season long.
Mark held his own last week.
He did. He did impress me. I would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though Sebastian Vettel won twice as many races.
I understand. But Steve, Mark came into the season having a bicycle accident, mm-hmm. a broken leg. I mean, he was a complete mess.
Yeah, plus he's busy running his restaurant. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, he wasn't up to full strength, definitely. And he got a little bit of a late start with the car because of it. So
let's put it this way, so people understand. He did not get rattled by Vettel.
Exactly.
And his first win was very impressive. That was a very impressive first win.
That was in the German Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah.
Si, senor.
Outstanding.
Yeah, mate. Okay, World Rally Championship from Sweden, round one to Mikko Hirvonen and Ford as they beat the Sebastian Loeb and Citroën combination to win the Swedish rally. Jari Matti Latvala was third in his Ford. Kimi Raikkonen was 30th in his Citroën and was busy.
And there were only 28 cars.
Were there?
I'm kidding.
Yeah, and he was busy taking the car out of
digging
out of snow. Yeah, hardworking guy.
Yeah, well, at least he finished. He says he'll do better.
He is finished.
No, but he said he'll do better in Mexico. He says that he suspects that there will be no snow in Mexico.
You know, when I saw that the next round is in Mexico, I thought, you know, maybe I should go there and try to get an interview with him. But, you know, I would hate to go there and then, you know, at the last minute, oh, he's not available.
Not even for the in-flight burrito?
No. Well, in-flight burrito with a vodka would be very nice.
See?
It's a new combination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, now we come to the IRL, the car of tomorrow.
Wait a minute. The car of tomorrow is NASCAR, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is car of day after tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
They are ahead of the game. Okay, three new designs were unleashed in the past week. The Lara released photos of some new ideas, and there is some political schmazzle going on how IRL released without express written consent their media list to the Italian manufacturer. Some reports are making claims that a decision has already been made in favor of the Lara. Have you seen the Lara car?
Well, the Lara car looked more like an IRL car. Of all the other concepts, it looked real.
Yeah. Okay. Swift, based in Southern California and owned by one-time IndyCar driver Hiro Matsuyama, also showed a design. They are currently supplying cars to Formula Atlantic and Formula Nippon. And both these, the Lara, they look like real cars.
Racing cars. Yes.
What say you, Mr. Open Mind?
I actually haven't seen him.
Okay. Then there is the Batmobile design from the Delta Wing design headed by Ben Bowlby, a Brit who works for Chip Ganassi, and he also designed the Champ Car Panos DP01, which was a very good-looking car.
I agree.
Okay, this design, the new one, is way ahead of its time, and I have a feeling this Delta Wing concept is headed southwest, and IRL will remain in serious turbulence. Sad but true. You know, this this design Delta Wing concept is being promoted by Firestone and by team owners, and they're really pushing for it to be accepted as a design.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it's...
Because, I mean, it's not a functional design for what we do today. I mean, it's a racing bizarre
car.
Looking.
Yeah, a racing car should look like a racing car and sound like a racing
exactly.
car.
Exactly. This thing looks like it's fine for straight races down the Bonneville salt flats.
Yeah, and the day Formula One cars make as much noise as a, you know, these solar-powered cars, you shoot me and it will be mercy killing.
Yeah, we'll take care of that next
Time. I'm sure you will. Show me your NRA badge first.
It's done.
Okay, cool. Okay, now we come to motorsports birthdays. Roger Penske was born on February 20th, 1937 in Shaker Heights, Ohio. The late Paul Newman also came from this town. And of course, Roger Penske has done anything and everything you can do in the world of motor racing, one stock car, sports car, Formula One. And if you don't know who he is, then, you know, what can I say? You know. Okay, Graham Hill, two-time F1 champion, Indy and Le Mans winner, was born on February 15, 1929 in Hampstead, London. And he was unfortunately killed in a plane crash in 1975 after returning from a test session at Paul Ricard. His driver, Tony Brise, and there were, I think, two other people also perished in the crash. Anything else you would like to say, Mr., before we move on to our next segment?
No. Another outstanding motorsports mondial, and I'm ready for a moment in motorsports history.
Si, senor, now it's time for Moment in Motorsport History. As we anxiously and painfully wait for the 2010 Grand Prix season to begin in Bahrain in less than a month now, today we will look at some of the different races that have ushered in a new season. Like the, you know, opening race of the season. Always look forward to the
level. I can't wait.
Yeah, same here.
I'm sure Peter Windsor can't wait.
Who?
You know, the guy on the grid for TTV.
All these news that are flying around, they're saying that Campos will merge with USF1. And, you know, I'm going to believe the grid when I see it. And if Campos and USF1 merge, then I think, you know, the names of these principals should be Carlos Anderson and Pablo Windsor.
Perfect.
You know, sort of a mix.
That.
Yeah.
I like that. That worked for me.
Okay, back to Moment in Motorsport History. 1950. Britain hosted the opening race of the season, which was also the opening of the FIA World Championship as we know it today. This has remained as the only season opener in Britain. The race was won by Nino Farina in an Alfa Romeo. In fact, all the seven championship races, except for the Indy 500, were won by Alfa drivers. Three by Farina, who became world champion, and three by Juan Manuel Fangio. And I'm sure you've heard of him.
Some guy from Argentina.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the Indy 500 was won by Johnny Parsons in a Curtis Craft Offenhauser, Offie as they call it here. 1951 Switzerland, the race took place in the streets of Bremgarten and was won by Fangio from pole position in his Alfa Romeo. Switzerland also hosted the season opener in 1952 when Piero Truffi scored his only Grand Prix victory in a Ferrari. And Piero Truffi wrote the book on motor racing, which is like considered the Bible of motor racing, techniques of motor racing. Oh.
I have a quick question.
How quick is
it? Who was the team principal of the Alpha team in 1950?
Peter Windsor.
No.
Was it not Enzo Ferrari?
In 1950, no, he had his own team then. He was in the 30s.
Okay.
Late 20s and 30s. Yeah, and 50s. Interesting.
He'd already moved off to Ferrari.
Yeah, late 40s. And his team did not take part in the first race. But they were in the second race and has never quit, which is, we love it. Mm. You got to love Ferrari, whether you like it or not.
I love Ferrari.
Maybe a message for USF1.
Yeah. Ooh. Now we come to?
Argentina.
You know, when Moa started following F1 in 1973, the season started in Buenos Aires. and the race was won by Emerson Fittipaldi over Francois Sivet. And MO considers this race as his favorite win because he came back from behind in the closing stages. But 2 decades earlier, in 1953, the season also started in Argentina, and the race was won by Alberto Ascari in a Ferrari from pole position. Local man, the Pampas Bull, Jose Fraulein Gonzalez, was third in a Maserati. He is still alive, very old now, and owns a Chevy dealership in Buenos Aires. His main claim to fame is giving Enzo Ferrari his first Grand Prix victory in Formula One, Silverstone, 1951. I would very much like to go. I think he's in not in good health, but if I could, I would love to go there and have some local guy help me, you know, do an interview with him for keeping it for forever.
Posterity.
There you go, sir. The 1958 season opener in Argentina is of historical importance. First ever win by a rear-engine car, Cooper Climax, in the hands of Stirling Moss. 1959, Jack Brabham takes his maiden win in the streets of Monte Carlo in a green Cooper, first ever Grand Prix win by an Australian, I should say a championship Grand Prix. At the end of the season, Black Jack picked up first of his 3 championships. 1962, racing fans get a Dutch treat on the seaside track at Zandvoort to start the 1962 season. Graham Hill took his first F1 race victory here in a BRM and was world champion at the end of the season. Phil Hill was third in this race in a Ferrari. And you know, this 1968 BRM is a beautiful looking car, and I saw that with the tailpipes going up in the air at the end. And I saw this car at the Autosport show some years ago. It's amazing how small it is, but a very, very impressive, simple piece of machinery. Going back to racing car, should look like a racing car. 1965, South Africa becomes the latest nation to start the new season. This time on New Year's Day, British drivers dominated the points-paying position. Bruce McLaren was the only non-Brit in top six. He finished fifth in a Cooper Climax. Jim Clark won the race from pole. John Surtees was second and Graham Hill third. Mike Spence was fourth, and Mike Spence was killed 3 years later in 1968 at Indy in a testing crash, only days after Jim Clark was killed at Hockenheim. And Jackie Stewart was sixth in this race. 1967 season opener in South Africa saw first Grand Prix win for Pedro Rodriguez, which turned out to be the last for Cooper and engine supplier Maserati. New Year's Day also started the 1968 season in South Africa and saw the last Grand Prix win for Jim Clark from pole position. The 1970 season opener in South Africa was the final victory in the great career of Jack Brabham. And the following year, 1971, saw first ever Grand Prix win for Mr. Mario Andretti in a Ferrari. Brazil 76, not 66. Was the season opener for the first time. Winner was world champion Niki Lauda over Patrick Depailler and Tom Price from Wales. And Tom Price used to be a childhood friend of Dave Richards of Pro Drive, and he was driving an American UOP Shadow. You remember Shadow?
Yeah, Don Nichols.
Exactly.
Thank you.
He lives here in Santa Clara.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Santa Cruz area.
I think he's over in Salinas.
Salinas? Somewhere near Salinas?
Yeah.
I think CIA dropped him off there.
Yeah, it says something like
yeah.
that.
And said to him, hope he finds a better life.
Yeah, something like that. He's
yeah.
sort of a strange character.
In 1981, this is my favorite. 1981, the season started from the United States for the first time. Long Beach, California, baby. Aussie Alan Jones was winner in his Williams. His teammate Carlos Reutemann was second. And the 1980 race winner, Nelson Piquet, third. Local chaps, Andretti and Cheever, were fourth and fifth, respectively. The 1990, may I have a break for a little Arizona tea?
Arizona tea? We could take a quick
5 break. Seconds.
Okay. Are we done here? Come on.
We're
let's
back.
Go. 1990.
1990 season also started in the United States from the streets of Phoenix, Arizona, but it's dry heat, baby. Yellow helmet, that would be Ayrton Senna in case you just discovered Formula One, won the race over highly motivated Jean Alesi. This is when they had that big dice.
That was an impressive race from Jean Alesi.
Yeah,
one of his best races.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Satoru Nakajima picked up the final point by finishing sixth. And he's, of course, the papito of Kazuki Nakajima.
Exactly.
Yeah. But wait, there's more.
Wasn't Mika Hakkinen in that race? Or
1991.
The following year.
Yeah, I was there. I was at that race.
Of course, you're always there, Nasser.
No, I was not there in 1990. And I ran into Mika Hakkinen in the hotel night before the race.
Yeah.
He was making his Grand Prix debut, by the way.
Huh, I wonder what he was looking for.
Huh? He was looking for Peter Windsor because he was with Lotus and, you know, Peter Windsor's friend, Peter Collins, owned the team. There's a lot of Peter Collins. Peter Windsor is all over today. 1996, the F1 Circus came to Albert Park in Melbourne to start the season. This is the race where Jacques Villeneuve made his dramatic F1 debut from pole position. Damon Hill was the winner with JV second. Fisichella in this race was in a Minardi and Rubinho in a Jordan Peugeot, but both retired from the race.
That was an impressive pole position for Jacques.
Oh, yeah, I was like,
I mean, he had
I was like, freeze frame.
500 the year before.
Uh-huh.
And it was exciting, you know, because to do that transition from Indy 500, you go to Formula One, and some people think, yeah, you know, but this guy said, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm the machismo man from Canada.
No, he is. And I got to tell you something. I've never seen a racing driver as cool as this guy. Nothing ever got to him, especially when he was behind Schumacher in the year he won the championship. Nothing, I mean, press, you know, what do you think, you're going to catch up, blah, blah. He was cool as ice. That was very impressive. And he's trying to get back into F1 now.
I heard he might have a chance at USF1. Test driver, maybe.
Test driver? Okay. I think they
should need a car first.
No.
I think, you know what they should do, USF1? They should get into NASCAR truck racing now. And they already have an experienced F1 driver there, whose name you don't want to take.
Oh, yeah. Mr. N.
Yeah, you know. Okay, finally, to please you, 2006.
Just for me?
For you.
Damn.
Only for you. 2006, Fernando Alonso wins a thrilling season opener over Michael Schumacher in Bahrain. The place will also open the 2010 season in a few weeks. Back to the 2000 race, Monty was fifth for McLaren, and little Nico Rosberg set the fastest lap on his F1 debut for Williams, but this year he will have adult supervision.
Yeah. How do you say adult in Deutsch?
Deutsch? I don't know.
Well, you should.
He would say Schui.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. But
das adult supervision.
Well, that was great moments in motorsports history, Nasser. Once again, you know, we just don't pay you enough here.
It's the love I crave for.
And we do.
Unconditional love.
Any final words on USF1?
Well, I got to tell you something. You know, a lot of reports are flying around.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and I'm going to believe the grid when I see it. But if this, but you know, I do want to get this off my chest, you know.
Get it off.
Yeah, exactly.
I want you to feel better.
Yeah, I will. You know, when this thing was announced, everybody was interested, you know, because people want to see an American participation. But you know, when Ken Anderson, one of the first things he said was, there are many Americans racing in Europe that people here don't know of. Well, I'd like to know who they are. You know, no American has ever won a GP2 race. And last time somebody won an F3 Auto Series race was Jonathan Summerton, the guy they dissed all season long. And then told him, you know, hey, you don't have a super license. And then you have a gentleman from Australia who overnight has become more American than Patrick Henry, putting on an American flag, American this, references to Skunk Works and this and that. And I really think these people were just trying to wave the flag.
And hoping that
money would just pour in.
I mean, I agree with you.
Yeah, people who write $1 million checks, they're not stupid. You know, they ask a lot of questions. You know, due diligence, as they call it. So, and all this hogwash that there was a comment made that shame on Formula One for not nurturing American talents. And these are not words I'm making up. This is all on the, you know, last few months, or last year, I should say. And then not to give any American a chance running to get a driver from, you know, who has not been in Formula One for 4 years.
Well, to be honest,
this is a joke award.
I think by the time they were signing Jose Maria, Windsor in the back of his mind knew that they had no chance. That the whole, the, that the house of cards that they had built was falling
apart. Yeah, and you know, keep in mind, they were always telling everybody, we've been working on this for 4 or 5 years. As soon as they launched their website, what happened? They get a cease and desist letter from Formula One management, change your name. How can they not know this? Peter Venser, the guy who's the media guy, I mean, you know.
The whole thing from the beginning looked suspicious, and I hate to say this, but I think we've all been had.
Yeah, as much as they could. But at least we did not write a check for $20
million. We did not. And yeah. Once again, we come out on top.
Yeah. Shared early of YouTube, I think his...
I think watching he figured it out too.
Yeah, his he can see his $20 million tubing.
Yeah. Yeah, he figured it out too, and he said, you know what, I'm out of here. This is stinko.
Yeah, I hear that he is trying to work something out with Campos. I don't understand what the connection there would be. But and, you know, Bernie was saying this for 3 months. And, you know, he knows everything that will happen before it happens.
Exactly.
But it's... But, you know, racing fans in America need to keep faith. Hopefully, you know, we have some very good young talent here. Summerton, Alexander Rossi, John Edwards is very good. Hopefully they will make it to Formula One, and if not a team, at least good.
Or won't turn to the dark side and go to NASCAR.
No, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So anyway, very good. Thank you, Nasser. I have a couple of announcements before we take the go to break. No, some good news about the F1 Weekly staff that people should know.
Which is?
Okay, the first is Toby and Joanne, of course, Toby, our webmaster, are expecting their second child. Congratulations, Toby. Outstanding work.
So you're staying warm in winter, that's good.
Exactly. Also, our executive producer, Mr. David Tapia, is getting married in April.
Wow.
I know you guys didn't get the invitation yet, but...
I did. I finally arrived.
Oh, you did. Good.
Well, I've changed residence, so it was routed.
I gave him a call, so you know, I made sure that was taken care of.
Thank you, sir.
But congratulations to David Tapia, getting married with his beautiful fiancée, Ms. Nova. So keep up the good work, David.
And I heard you are also renewing your marriage vows to Renault and Matra and Peugeot. And
exactly.
Pahan.
Well, I do that every March.
Michelin.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So congratulations to everyone for all this happiness that's just coming up. So good for Toby and Joanne and for David Tapia. So there you have it. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the wrap-up in 60 seconds.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we go right into the wrap-up, we've got... the forum updates.
Forum updates. It may be carnival week out there, but in the forum discussions, it is as serious as ever. Our band of serious F1 experts keep their attention firmly focused on motorsports actuality. US F1's headquarters are for sale. Ted Hurley drops US F1 and heads to Dallara. Kimi stops hugging trees and decides to crash into a snowbank. Tires for 2012 and the impact on tires in Formula 1. Delta Wing unveils IndyCar concept, and opinions are divided in the forum. Daytona 500 should be shortened to 10 miles, some forum members seem to think so. The countryside moved to a discussion about the size of men's appendages. Never mind that. This week, we also celebrated H. Bright's birthday, as well as C. Perez 41's, Sienna's, Ario Wedge and Poles. Happy birthday to all new members. Jensega introduced himself to the forum. Welcome, Jen. We now have 538 registered members and still growing. We need to beat the record for most members online at the same time of
99, which is now almost 2 years old. Shall we stage a login at the start time of the first GP of the series? Of the season, that is. What do the hosts think?
Good idea. Why not? Absolutely. We've been trying to beat that 99 number for a while. And I want to say welcome to all the new members. As the season gets closer, this happens every year. People are looking for F1 and they stumble upon us.
The podcast and the forum.
Exactly. So we're getting welcome to new listeners and new forum members. You're going to have a lot of fun. We've got a great forum, great people. And there you have it. Nas, you got a little commento?
Commento. You know, remember some years ago we did that Skype conversation with people? I think we should do that one more time. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you do it, Nas.
What about you and Steve? Man with the open mic?
The problem with the Skype is the delay, the sound gets a little wacko, and I've got an emotional scar with Skype, and I can never Skype again.
Oh, wow.
It's a long story, but yeah. I'll have my therapist write
send you the excuse.
Exactly. But that's a good idea. A lot of people like that. Autoracer 5 always wanted to do the Skype thing.
Everybody, well, they often, there are a handful of forum members that get together during the races and have chats and Skype.
They do chat with Skype, and that's a great place to get more information. If you want to do some of the Skype with other forum members from F1 Weekly, is go to the forum, and there's a thread about that, and a week or two before the race the season starts, there'll be more information on the Skyping. Okay, let's get to our email of the week. And this is a good one. It's from Bill from Chicago, Illinois. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. You guys are great. Love the show. And I've been listening since number one. Let's email a little more often. every 300 podcasts.
Oh, maybe he's on the forum.
You mentioned that you are headed to Canada in June. I have been in F1 for about 8 years and have never been to a race. I'm looking to go to Canada and need some advice on where to sit. Given the prices of the tickets, I don't want to waste money on a bad location. Also, what are your thoughts on the packages that you can get, i.e. Grand Prix tours, and there's Formula tours? Any suggestions you can offer would be appreciated. Thanks, Bill. Well, that's a great email, Bill. And once again, I'm going to bring the forum up. There's a Canadian thread about people recommending seats. And as soon as I find out where I'm sitting, I've already had my tickets purchased through a connection I have in Canada, but I don't know exactly where my seat is. When I find out, I will post it on the forum. So if anybody's interested in maybe some F1 Weekly people sitting all together so we can have a group hug and all that stuff.
Well, typically, if it's anything like Indy for practice and Quali will basically post something up saying, you know, we're going to camp out here to watch for
exactly
the session, you know, come by and say hi.
Yeah, you'll be tweeting with your BlackBerry, I believe, Stephen.
Yeah, if I'm there.
But no, it should be great, but we will post on the forum about where to sit in the Canadian Grand Prix. And don't forget, we're meeting at Hurley's Irish Pub Friday, June 11th on Crescent Street in beautiful downtown Montreal. At 5 p.m. Be there or be square. There you have it, gentlemen. Another wonderful wrap-up. Real quickly, calendars are almost gone. I think we have a half a dozen left. Marine Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Jim Russell Northern California Road Tax Series. You can give them a call at 415-898-0999 or simply go to marinekarting.com. If you want to mention, real quickly, I do like the Facebook and Twitter sites. They're great for interacting with F1 Weekly members. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email us at info@f1weekly.com. Thanks, everybody. And I just want to say goodbye to Peter Windsor, Nasser Hamid, and
Steve. I want to say hello to him.
Yeah. Okay, good night.
Get him on the show.
Yeah, good night, everyone.
Good night.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.